Treasury gets a point person to address systemic racism. I'm David Brancaccio. The U.S. Department of the Treasury has named a counselor for racial equity. Janice Bowdler will head the Treasury's efforts to combat racial inequities in banking and in other parts of the financial system. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer is following this first ever appointment. What will be her mandate?
Well, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen says Bowdler, who's Latinx, will be in charge of improving access to programs like the Child Tax Credit. She'll be forming a committee to advise the Treasury Department's leaders on racial equity issues. Yellen says Treasury needs to ensure the economy recovers from the pandemic in a way that addresses inequities that existed long before anyone got COVID.
Inequities, to get specific, those can include unequal access to loans or other banking services?
Absolutely. We've reported on data showing people of color are denied home loans at higher rates, even if they're as well qualified as a white buyer. And there's a lack of access to banking accounts. Plus, historically, there haven't been many people of color in the top executive positions at financial institutions.
And what's Janice Bowdler's work been in the past in this area?
Most recently, she was president of the J.P. Morgan Chase Foundation. There, she worked to improve access for people of color to banking services, including more loans for entrepreneurs of color. Before that, she spent 10 years at Unidos U.S. working on research and advocacy on things like job creation, housing, and banking.
People not interested in getting vaccinated against COVID are not receptive to financial incentives to get the shots. That's according to a new working paper from University of Southern California and UCLA researchers. Unvaccinated people were randomly offered various forms of encouragement, including money, but researchers say none of those strategies increased overall vaccination rates among those in the study. Marketplace's Caroline Champlin reports.
The researchers randomly offered participants, members of Contra Costa California's Medicaid program, various incentives, public health messages, vaccination appointments, and money, either 10 or 50 bucks. USC behavioral economist Tom Chang figured one of those things would work.
And I was just completely wrong. We looked at the data and nothing seemed to work.
In fact, he says promising money may have made some vaccine-hesitant people more distrustful.
And they're sort of worrying about, you know, why do they want me to take it? Or do they seem to kind of be pushing this on me?
Chang says health officials might want to consider that in the future. Dr. Kevin Volpe heads the UPenn Center for Health Incentives and Behavioral Economics. He's interested to know if the way incentives were handled earlier this year impact booster rates now.
People might learn that if you wait, then you'll get an incentive next time.
He says vaccine mandates do seem to be getting more people vaccinated. I'm Caroline Champlin for Marketplace.
The U.S. and China are at least talking at high levels about trade relations. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen and China's Vice Premier Liu He spoke on a video call early this morning. Both sides say it's important to strengthen communication and coordination. While the trade relationship remains fraught, U.S. financial firms are getting new access to China. BlackRock is the first firm to sell a mutual fund in China fully run from abroad. And in recent days, Goldman Sachs got approval to take full ownership of its joint venture there. Some say it is an odd time for this. Marketplace's China correspondent Jennifer Pak is in Shanghai. Hello.
Hi there.
Foreign financial services firms were long restricted from Chinese markets. Why is China opening up this sector now?
China is open to foreign expertise in areas it lacks. And in this case, U.S. banks are really good at things like risk management. So China's caps on foreign ownership in securities, mutual fund firms, life insurance, and futures trading came off in stages in recent years.
And how will life change for an operation like Goldman Sachs in China?
It means greater control in how it can grow. You know, Goldman Sachs, in its joint venture with its Chinese partner, has been doing securities underwriting, giving merger advice, and now it can also ramp up its asset and wealth management businesses. There are just so many areas that foreign banks want to branch out in. But foreigners hold less than 2% of banking assets in mainland China.
What do you think, Jennifer? Is this a good time to be more exposed to China, even prominent investors? George Soros wrote an article warning against investing in China at a moment when the government there is on a campaign to intervene in markets and clamp down on various sectors, including tech. President Xi Jinping and his team could do the same with financial services, clamp down.
It's true, but investing in China has always been risky. You know, the hope, though, is that the bigger the risk, the bigger the rewards. Goldman Sachs, for example, came to China all the way back in 1994. China hadn't even opened its economy to the outside world then yet. And part of the trade imbalance between the two countries is that China is so good at manufacturing goods and selling it to the U.S., but American firms are really good in services, and yet, for example, like their banks, are underrepresented in the Chinese market. So business groups have been pushing for the opening of the financial services sectors for years. It's also part of the U.S.-China Phase 1 trade deal. But yeah, investment in China is more challenging now.
Marketplace's China correspondent Jennifer Pak in Shanghai, thank you.
Thank you.
Our producers are Rose Conlon, Meredith Gerritsen, Stephen Ryan, Alex Schroeder, Daniel Shin, and Erica Soderstrom. I'm David Brancaccio. Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.